From WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio, this is the Chancellor's Report, featuring Mark Mone, Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Here's your host, Dave Edwards.
We're back with another edition of the Chancellor's Report. I'm Dave Edwards. Mark Mone, the Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, is our guest, as he always is. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Dave. Great to be here.
You know, I want to just look back for one second. For those of our listeners who were listening to last month's program, I think they heard a very interesting discussion, really, about the whole Foxconn thing. And I didn't realize, I guess, until I heard that program, of just how important that project is, not only to the state, to the region, but also to UWM. And I think it's, you know, I think it's wonderful that you're taking a lead in getting UWM and other educational institutions involved in that.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more. We have not only the direct effects in terms of how, whether it's our engineering or some of the activities in the business school might participate, but more broadly, what this does is it sets a stage for the galvanizing effects for higher ed to really work together. So we're working with other universities in a way we never have before. In fact, we've created a new acronym, a new name for our work. It's HERA, which is Higher Ed Regional Alignment, and it takes the 23 two- and four-year public and private academic institutions and works on better curriculum alignment, works on better ways to meet the needs of employers and identify for our students, here's opportunities today and in the future. And that is something that we've talked about before on the show, where you have that workforce shortage, but you have 180,000 students in the talent pipeline.
Right.
Can we get better alignment here? So that's what Foxconn has brought. It'll benefit them, but it really is going to benefit everybody.
Mm-hmm. And I put that into the context of the discussion that we had, and I wanted to talk a little bit more about it today, the Research One status for the university, because I think, at least from my perspective, we're starting to see something very unique developing here in southeastern Wisconsin with Foxconn, the talent that they're going to recruit, but also the research talent that you're going to be able to recruit in years to come because of this Research One status that UWM has attained.
I think you couldn't be more right. I think of that as I think about what you're describing. It's a cluster. It's a cluster of like-minded entities, but different entities. You know, there's the academic institutions and the economic side of it. There's the citizenry. There's all the different adjacencies, you know, the different parts of this. And you know, as I think about our research university role, it's both one of the things that is a talent and a company attractor, but it's also a great provider and supplier. And there's no region that thrives economically in this country and frankly in the world that doesn't have the power of research universities at the heart. If you think about Austin, Texas, if you go to today, you know, the rising stars in terms of cities that are thriving, it's really around that energy that comes from not just the college students, but the research from faculty and graduate students that are involved. So we're making a difference right here in this region as the only urban research university that has that R1 status. It's pretty rare to have that, frankly, in the country.
Yeah. You know, maybe that's the right word, an energy. And it brings an energy together, you
mm-hmm.
know. So if with R1, and I guess most people out of the world of academia never track this, but when you think about it, when you think of all of the thousands of universities that are out there, UWM is now one of 115, is that correct?
Exactly.
To hold this status. How do you get this status?
Well, it's been decades of a lot of intense work. And what it comes from really is the type and amount of funding, research funding that comes, the number of faculty involved with different research projects. So they look at different doctoral degrees and different areas, different categories of work that's done, the number of postdocs that are employed. And there's different areas that come both in terms of sciences and areas in humanities, areas in particular fields and programs that all cumulatively have to have certain types of research grants and a lot of the work behind that. So it's not something that happens easily. It's a matter of commitment and long-term types of research. So have an impact. We look at where our students go. We look at the types of work that they're involved with. But it also has to do with You know, and we think about Carnegie Institute looking at how we do relative to our peers on a lot of other indicators. And so we really want to uphold that and continue to make the difference that we have in this community and beyond because of the research that we do.
The university just put out a research magazine which highlighted some of the research projects. You want to talk about some of those? Because again, some of these I've never heard of before.
You know, it's so cool. I encourage, and I'm going to give the website here shortly, but I have to tell you, and I brought a copy of the research magazine. It's got so many dozens of different examples of the things that we're doing. It's something I'm very proud of to see how this magazine has evolved. But, you know, today in the newspaper, there's a story about a 9-year-old who called about his dad's alleged opioid overdose. And one of our researchers, in fact, there's a team of researchers at UWM, Tina Freeberger, Melinda Cavanaugh, are looking at exactly this issue. We had in Milwaukee County in 2016, 300 opioid deaths, opioid-related deaths. And we have researchers that are studying the effects on kids. And today's newspaper story is the reality that, unfortunately, there's a lot of kids that are involved, left without a mom or a dad, and oftentimes the profile of this is a 30-year-old white male is the common, you know, that's kind of the profile
right.
for a lot of this. So this research looks at the effect on kids, what do they need then, and also some things that are a little bit controversial, both adults and kids that need to be better at dealing with opioid overdoses, you know, the use of Narcan and things like that. So that's a very powerful example that's relevant to a lot of individuals, unfortunately, today. So it's the type of, you know, support that we need to provide. I think about, you know, something shifting gears back to the comment we made about energy, and I think about the use of batteries today. Mm-hmm. And I look at your watch, Dave. I look at, you know, our phones we have, you know, our hybrid cars or pretty much everything, we are always like, wouldn't it be great to have batteries that last longer or that charge faster if you have something that charges? And we have two researchers actually, including a larger team of physicists who have been working exactly on this issue in addition to the folks that we have over in engineering that are working with Johnson Controls. But we have a couple of faculty who are taking the lead, Carol Hirschmugel and Maria Gajdziska-Josifowska, and they're developing new technologies to advance the life of batteries. It's a replacement for lithium ion batteries. It's a graphene coating, and basically it allows what I just said, charge faster, last longer. Wow. You know, they've actually created a new company called Safely for Li for the ion, but Safely. And what they have done is launched a company through the skills that they've learned in our I-Corps program. We're one of the NSF I-Corps programs that we're the hub for that. So we have many area universities that participate. So that's another example of the kind of applicability of having a research university right here. A couple other things, just, you know, again, there's dozens and dozens of stories, but a couple more I've got to tell you about. Because of everything we do online today, Twitter, Facebook, online purchasing, social media, all the different things, there's accumulatively a ton of data. There's just a lot of information that's out there. And a lot of times that's used, that information is used behind the scenes for research. And most people are not aware of that, but you wonder, you know, how does it track what I, you know, I'm online and all of a sudden a Nordstrom ad pops up or an NFL or a concert, you know, all of a sudden
sure.
these related, you know, how does that happen? There's a lot of stuff that happens behind the scenes. And some of our researchers, in fact, the leader of this, Michael Zimmer, is leading on the use of this big data. He's recently been the recipient of, with others, of a $3 million grant to help understand how is that data used and what are the ethics behind this and how aware are people of information that's used. If you might have put it out there on a dating app, but all of a sudden it's later used in other purposes that you didn't
sure.
have information people were knowledgeable about.
Yeah. So these are real practical things. I mean, sometimes yeah. when people think about university faculty research, they think about some esoteric concept that has very little impact on a person's daily lives. But really, each one of those that you described has a very practical application. Is that a trend?
I think that it's one of the things that Milwaukee, UW-Milwaukee, excels in. Uh-huh. And let me give a little differentiation. I came from Washington State University, and I've been, you know, whether it's at and I won't name other schools, but let's just imagine in the Big Ten or other areas where important research is happening at a lot of universities. But in Milwaukee, because we are an urban research university, what has drawn a lot of faculty here, and I think what keeps a lot of our faculty and staff, is exactly the types of applied research challenges and opportunities that you just asked about. You know, think about why this city came to be what it is. Industry and economics and lifestyle and the reality of being on the confluence of three rivers. So we've got water, so we've got support for getting all things related to water. And we grew up around water industry, breweries and you know, the fishing and tourism and a lot of things on the Great Lakes. And our researchers, both in the School of Freshwater Science and the Peck School of the Arts, are today doing a mapping of the Inner Harbor. And this whole project is to look at, we have all these, you know, as we rebirth the city, so to speak, as we look at the waterfront, we have 200 years of growth and things where we've used water and been involved with it. But today, how do we recreate Milwaukee around the water? So we're doing a map, developing this map that is going to be useful for everybody from the DNR to business to folks that are really interested in how do you have a hub around greater attraction of tourists, greater attraction of life on the water in a way that sustains and propels this. So it's absolutely, you're absolutely right. It's just the focus on real problems, real issues, and we're all beneficiaries of it.
Yeah, indeed. So I wanted to shift gears here. I noticed that the U.S. House Education and Workforce Committee approved something called the PROSPER Act at the end of December, and this had to do with educational reform. What does that mean, and how does that impact higher education?
Good question. PROSPER is an acronym, and it stands for Promoting Real Opportunity, Success, and Prosperity through Education Reform Act. You can see why they needed an acronym. Yeah. It's a lot. It's a word salad there. It's a lot. But so bottom line, I'll just bring it right down to the key things. The Higher Ed Education Act goes back to 1965, and it has been needed to be updated. There's been stopgap measures from time to time, but it really has needed a considerable overhaul. So mm-hmm. it's been in the process for a long time. And so finally we have something that, as you mentioned, the House has passed or looking at, you know, their subcommittee, an individual, you know, committee has looked at it, and they're going to bring, Senator Ryan wants to bring this, or Congressman Ryan wants to bring this forward to the full House. Meanwhile, the Senate's working on it. There's a lot of politics in terms of where it will go.
Sure.
But what it means for us as educators and what it means especially for our students and our communities, there are some advantages. There's some positives. And so let's start with those, and then we'll talk about some of the challenges. On the positive side, there's greater prior military credit. With our veteran population, that means an awful lot. So we can give academic credit for prior military types of experiences. Great. It enables us to give more support for our FLEX program, so online learning for more access for students, some good things there. I think that we're all pleased with the direction that the Pell Grant program continues. That's really important when I keep thinking about, you know, students that need the type of support that our students and, frankly, all college students need today. If you think about why students can't continue, it's oftentimes it's that financial challenge, so Pell Grants. I also like the fact that they encourage students to stay in school for more credits each semester, and you can actually get a bit of a bonus. The challenge for our students is they work so much, it's hard to take 15 credits at a time.
Sure.
So there's some real positives there. On the other side, though, and what it really means is I think about our students, and I'll give an overall summary, but just specifically, you know, some of the challenges come where they have reduced significantly the support for the TRIO and pre-college programs. We have six different programs that we have been an exemplar for, things that help middle school and college students, or middle school and high school students, get prepared for and get ready for college. We have 2,100 students last year that participated in those programs, and when you reduce or eliminate that funding, that's devastating. Another challenge with PROSPER is that they're going to no longer have the subsidized loans. And if you imagine, and if you've experienced this, if you pick up a loan and the subsidy has basically covered the interest, and what the American Council on Education has projected just this impact alone, if a student took out $4,000 a year for 4 years, the repayment of that loan over its life, it would cost 44% more by removing the subsidies. Similarly, there's some other aspects in terms of campuses, assuming the risk of default, which is really concerning to college academic environments. It would be akin to any business providing a service, and then if the person buying it doesn't pay, that they have to essentially eat the cost of that. So the logic of that is very, very concerning, as well as the effect. And then some of the elimination of some of the international students and overseas research programs. I mean, we're talking not reduction, but complete elimination. In a global connected world, when we think about the role of research and support for not only our students here, but the students abroad, to eliminate that seems to be kind of going the wrong way in terms of what the world is needing to be more educated about. So bottom line, there's some great aspects of this. We're pleased with some of the directions. But we've been very concerned, and we've been putting a lot of people forward in terms of advocacy and how we're trying to address these concerns to get them modified so that our students, for affordability and for access, can continue to study at UW-Milwaukee.
Now, I know that your government relations team and you, I'm sure, have been in touch with lawmakers in Washington on this very issue. I mean, what are you hearing back? I mean, because as you said, there's some things that would really help students here in Milwaukee, presumably elsewhere. But some of these other things, I've got to believe, are pretty unpopular across the country.
You know, we're hearing, we've had unprecedented work in terms of advocacy, where we've had representatives from Medical College of Wisconsin, Madison, Marquette, and UWM together on the Hill. And our Vice Chancellor for University Relations has made multiple trips to D.C. I've met with Congressman Ryan. I've met with a number of individuals. We've written letters. We're absolutely hearing some directional support, some of the things that we've been wanting support for. We're hearing that don't worry about everything right now. We're going to probably have something that's more moderate that doesn't eliminate all of these areas. But it's still too early. We're going to be seeing throughout the spring. In fact, I don't think the House version will be complete until May at the soonest. So we do have some concerns. We're talking across the UW system in terms of the lobbyists there and the work that we're trying to do to keep this more positive. So it's a little too early to know how this is all going to shake out.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll have to keep us informed on how that's going in future programs. You know, that's a process that takes a long time. One thing that seems to happen very quickly is this issue of reorganizing the University of Wisconsin system and colleges. And, you know, we talked about this on the show before, but basically under the new system, UW-Waukesha and UW-Washington County will be part of UWM this July 1.
Yeah.
That does not give you a lot of time.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this before, and you said there was a lot of things in play to ease this transition. Update.
So, thank you, Dave. It's an important topic. I'll just cover, I think, maybe two simple areas that are incredibly complex, but just to report on them. One is the submission of the materials that we had to for the accreditation. A lot of people don't think through that, you know, at the student level, at the business, at the parent level. It's like, well, right, how is this going to provide better talent? How is this going to provide better ways for me to, you know, get into UWM or another four-year institution? Or how do I make sure that I keep in place what I have? But there's a big component of this that is looked at by the authorizing bodies of, you know, kind of our charter. How do we exist? And do we have approval? And if you don't have that, students don't qualify for loans, the higher education, the Department of Education. You know, I mean, just like you cannot operate. Your doors can't open if you don't have that authorization. So there's some real important processes and applications. And so the system has had a huge amount of work on that. And then the second one is more functionally, how will we operate as one entity? We're taking, yes, we're part of the same family, but we have parallel systems, and we've got a lot of staff that, you know, just a couple of years ago, they went through a complete reorganization where they centralized and they regionalized. And now we're having to unwind all of that to get it so that we can basically take two entities, the Washington County and the Waukesha campuses, and really merge a lot of the processing around student enrollment, recruitment, marketing efforts, and then how do the curriculum align? How do we make sure that that's that seamless transition? We have 130 people working from UWM alone on this, and a lot of people at Waukesha and Washington County. So there's a lot of heavy lifting, and they have now put some initial draft organization chart and process pieces together. But we've got functional teams. And meanwhile, this is happening across the UW system. So you have these parallel things happening. And we're constantly, we have chancellor calls every other week. We've got CBO calls every other week. We've got a lot of functional teams meeting weekly, every other week. So it's just a big, heavy lift.
So let's just take one of those areas. Let's take aligning the curriculum. To me, that sounds like, well, actually, it'd be simple, but you have a lot of faculty members on both sides. You have a lot of structures in place. You mentioned accreditation. It seems to me that it's would be extremely difficult to pull that together in such a short order that, and yet you can't phase it in.
Yeah,
your back is up against the wall because you still have to provide an education for these students. This isn't an experiment.
To some, yes, but this is a yes, but you're absolutely right. the doors stay open. It's basically turning a 707 or a 727 into a 777 while it's in the air.
Yeah.
So you're absolutely right. You can't shut this thing down and figure all this out. So we have to keep it going. In fact, though, we will phase some of these aspects. We want to keep everything as it is. And then over time, to your point, it would be impossible to go through all of the different areas. And when we talk about alignment, let's dive into this just a little more specifically. I'll pull an example out. We have some programs that in the engineering area have a calculus-based curriculum at a two-year college. Well, if you have that, great. You can align that a lot easier with a four-year institution because that's foundational to seamlessly come into UWM. If you haven't had calculus-based preparation for that, you can't have it. So if a program, let's say UW-Waukesha, does not have calculus-based pre-engineering, you can't. There's not a lot to align, but you have to go through and figure out how can we better support that so that if they were getting program support from elsewhere, how do we then provide that? And who pays for that? How much enrollment is there? And if you're talking about 8 or 10 students, is there a critical mass? So as you dive into this, we can't figure all of that stuff out across all of these areas. And in fairness to those two campuses, there's programs and strengths that they have. And then there's some things that they don't have. They're much smaller in scale. You're talking about operations that are two-year colleges with enrollments in one case of 2,000 to 2,500 students, in another case 1,100 to 1,300 students. We're an enterprise that has 25 to 26,000 students and a complete array of programs. So finding those areas, having the faculty committees work on this, and then maintaining the identities of UW-Waukesha and UW-Washington County in ways that are meaningful and very respectful of their talents, their student needs, their geographies. That's not all going to happen by July 1st.
Well, and maybe this is an unfair question because you haven't had a chance to really walk through it. But does UW-Waukesha exist in name after July 1?
I think it will probably be, the draft working title right now is UWM at Waukesha and UWM at Washington County. So that's the thinking that we have right now. So the badging, you're absolutely right. It does change in that. So conceptually, and we want that. We want this to be, the vision is for this to be locations much like we have off-campus locations in this community. We have the Zilber School of Public Health at UWM. We have the, in the School of Freshwater Sciences, our School of Continuing Education. Those are all parts, but they're different areas. And yet it all works together. So I think that broader branding, that broader engagement, and we want the students and the communities to think about this as UWM as a pipeline, really, that reinforces the opportunity for access. At the same time, two-year degrees for many, the associate degree, that's fine, and that's what they need.
Mm-hmm. I've also heard a lot of faculty members very nervous about this, nervous about, what this means for their jobs. Where are they teaching? I've heard a lot of concern about what does that mean for future layoffs?
Well, you know, we've gone through at UW-Milwaukee the most significant budget challenges we've ever had in my time as chancellor. In 2014, we'd still been challenged by previous budget cuts. And then in 2015, we had, as you know, significant cuts. So we've got our budget nearly balanced. We've been working quite hard to manage as responsibly and carefully as we can while still upholding our mission and maintaining the research and access and community engagement roles that we have. And the colleges, you know, have why this restructuring was precipitated was the enrollment challenges that the UW colleges had been facing for the last 7 years. They've had, on average, reductions of about 32% enrollment decline. Some campuses as much as 50% since 2010. So this was something that we honestly have to look at and say we're inheriting and receiving campuses that have significant structural deficits, whether it's at the modest or the extreme. We haven't gotten all that figured out because we don't know how the proceeds will be distributed. So we have to make some careful evaluations and look at this and say, can we bolster, can we make these stronger and more efficient together? But I don't want to have a situation where UWM is you know, having to make further cuts and layoffs on our campus to do this. We're going to have to look at this holistically and plea with system, UW system, to make sure we've got the right kind of support and help because they have had difficult challenges themselves in terms of that regionalization. So we have to do this in a way that is fair and right for both organizations.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll have a lot to talk about in future months of the show. We've got a couple minutes left. I know you've been traveling a lot, meeting with a lot of people. Do you get like a weekend where you can just like stay home, put on the sweatpants, not walk outside, not give a speech, where you can just totally, you know, decompress?
I haven't had a weekend like that I can remember, but I do have – there are days. There are some times when I do have that, but sometimes you have a string of 6 or 7 weekends in a row where you have 3 events on Friday night, 4 events on Saturday, 2 on Sunday afternoon. And so it's – and a lot of that is fun and it's great. And the variety, you know, it's a basketball game here. It's a reception there. So you have that, and then there's always the evening events that happen during the week. They're always good, but it is nice to have some pure sweatpants, cotton T-shirt downtime, and that doesn't happen enough. But you really appreciate it more when you do have it.
I suppose. I how do you keep your mind fresh?
Some would argue I don't. I think most would say I don't. You know, I think part of it is the variety, but I think, you know, the challenge that I have is you need to have time for reflection and absorption, and I don't get enough of that. Yeah. You know, I don't have enough time to read and really process and have that distance that you need because you're always kind of in it, your head down, you know, and you're, you know, that high speed, high intensity. And that's good, but I do think, you know, just self-critically, I do need to stand back a little bit more. I'm very fortunate to have such a great team, and we have such great quality people at UWM, faculty, staff, that they take on an awful lot, so that helps me. But I need to be better at that in terms of standing back, being more strategic and reflective.
I'm just trying to learn how to do it from you. That's all I'm trying, buddy. All right. Well, we are out of time. Mark Money, thank you once again for joining us, and we'll talk to you again next month.
Thank you, Dave.
You've been listening to The Chancellor's Report featuring Mark Money, Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. If you would like more information, go to uwm.edu/chancellor.